September 11th, 2009, the Norris Group hosted I Survived Real Estate 2009. In this critical final quarter, the Norris Group assembled a Gold Star panel of accomplished industry specialists to discuss the impact of seismic economic shifts, head-scratching regulations, challenging legislation, and the accelerated pace of opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds for this unique event supported the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for the Cure. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: the Business Press, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronsgeist, Invest Club for Women, Fry Wiles, the creative agency responsible for the website iSurvive2009.com, JK Short Sale, Entrust California and Hugh Broma, the Nixon Library, NVT Productions, the National Flip and Fix Network, and White House Catering. Visit iSurvive2009.com for information.
Last year, iSurvive was really about covering how we got to where we were at in the market and what 2009 was going to bring for our industry. This year, we're very lucky to have a group of panelists that are really going to talk to us about legislation, stimulation, and some possible solutions that might help us get out of this mess. We're very proud of this event. 100% of the ticket proceeds go to Susan G. Komen for the Cure. For those of you who may not know, Komen is the world's largest grassroots network of breast cancer survivors and activists, fighting to save lives, empowering people, ensuring quality care for all of the people, and energizing science to find the cure. That was the goal of the Susan G. Komen sister, whose goal was to eradicate cancer. As many of you know, my family has been personally been touched by cancer, and I'm very blessed tonight to have my mother, 14-year survivor, in the audience this evening. I am constantly amazed by her strength and her willingness to fight. She truly inspires everybody around her. And I have to say, I'm also very honored to watch the team that my mom and dad have become in fighting this together, which is a very important part. So I know many of you in the audience tonight are also here honoring people in your lives that have dealt with cancer, and it's the last time I'll ask you to stand, but it's important. If you're here tonight honoring somebody who has had cancer or has had to deal with cancer, will you please stand? That's what makes tonight very special for us. We were more than surprised with the economy. We thought this year would be a little rough. And thanks to our sponsors, our event partners, individuals, and the people on our walk team that has blossomed to, I think we're approaching 40. As of today, we are at the $50,000 mark for Susan G. Komen. There's still time. The Susan G. Komen Walk for the Cure of Orange County is actually September 27th in Newport Beach. For those of you watching online, if you enjoy this evening, we ask that you make any small donation, anything that you'd like, anything that you feel. 100% goes to Susan G. Komen for the Cure, and we'd be very happy if we could hit the 60 grand mark this year. Okay, I am almost finished with my part up here, and I might get to eat tonight. I really need to thank the platinum sponsors tonight, who are a very huge part of making this possible this evening. If you could please hold your applause till after I read all their names, that would be wonderful. In sort of alphabetical order, the Business Press, Entrust Administration, Inc., Fry Wiles, Investors Workshops, Invest Club for Women, JK Short Sales, MVT Productions, the National Fix and Flip Network, the Richard Nixon Library, the San Diego Creative Investors Association, and White House Catering, who is working very hard this evening to make sure you're all happy. So thank you very much. We also have a very long list of gold sponsors. They're in your program. They've been on the website, and they've been airing this evening as we've been enjoying dinner. Thank you all so much for your contributions. It's been a huge help in helping us reach this goal. We have a very information-packed evening, and we are running a little bit behind. So without any further delay, your host for this evening has been a real estate investor for 29 years. He's a realtor, trained appraiser, hard money lender, educator, and real estate investor with over 2,000 transactions under his belt. In 1997, he wrote The California Comeback, predicting that the comeback of California real estate. And in 2006, as many as you know, he wrote The California Crash, predicting the pending California downturn. Ladies and gentlemen, I am very proud to introduce my father, Bruce Norris.
I'm gonna start acting like Aaron here in a minute. That kind of response means an awful lot to somebody that owns a company because I know that that is not just directed to me, but to what everyone at my company stands for, maybe how you've been treated, and the respect that you have for us as a group. And so I really thank you, and I thank all the people that I get to work with at the company, because you deserve what you just heard. So thank you for all of your hard work. I want to especially thank two people that make this happen tonight. Diana Barlay, who is tirelessly trying to figure out who's going to come, who's going to sit where, and she pulled it together, and I really appreciate her. And Aaron, who dreams this kind of stuff up, he's added this to our company's agenda, if you will. And it's been a great thing. The radio interviews was his idea. If he can think of a way to be of a higher service, he dreams it up, lets me know about it, and we try to implement it. So this is his brainchild, and I'm very proud of what he's brought to the company. I'm going to need some of that tonight. Tonight's a very unusual evening. The panelists that will be in front of you are among the top experts in their field in the entire country. Many of them have stood before Congress and lobbied for legislation that would help their industry. I think you're going to hear some of their experiences tonight, and it may make it clear as to why sometimes things don't get done correctly. But I'm very happy to have them here, because there's some things that I get to ask them on the radio show. So I'm excited that we have these panelists, but I also am excited for the panelists, because this audience is very special. This audience is a group of investors who take risks with their own money. They're the entrepreneurs of America. And this group represents probably in excess of $500 million of net worth without batting an eye. And they earned it probably one house repair at a time. I'm very proud of what this group does, and all across the country, there are investors just like us that, if given a chance, will be able to purchase thousands of homes in the next couple of years and be a very big help in getting us through this real estate crisis. So I'm as excited for the audience as I am for the panelists. This is a perfect match, and I hope tonight that we actually get to accomplish something, because that's the purpose of it. To try and see if we can come to an understanding to where maybe we can get some things done that haven't been thought of before. So there'll be some creative ideas thrown out tonight. And after dessert up here, I'll get to question each of them in their expertise. And we'll see if we can't brainstorm a little bit tonight. What a perfect opportunity to do that. Our first speaker is going to be Christopher Thornburg. Dr. Thornburg is an expert in the study of regional economies, real estate dynamics, labor markets, and business forecasting. He's been involved in a number of special studies measuring the impact of important events on the economy, including the NAFTA treaty, the California power crisis, port security, and the September 11th terrorist attacks. Prior to launching Beacon, he worked with the UCLA Anderson Forecast, where he regularly authored the outlooks for California. Christopher, we welcome you.
So I got here tonight, and Aaron said, do you have slides for your talk you're going to give tonight? And I said, I'm giving a talk tonight? You know, it's interesting. Not only is, of course, tonight the 8th anniversary of the September 11th attack, but we're also basically 1 year away from, of course, the monumental financial collapse that began last fall. And that, of course, has to do with the failure of Lehman, and, of course, the government takeover of Fannie and Freddie. And it's been a very rough year. Now, what you're going to see in the papers over the course of the next week, as there's conversations about Lehman, is you're going to hear this mantra. The failure of Lehman is what put us into this downturn. That somehow or other, the government's failure to bail that Wall Street firm out is why we've seen the overall economy contract by something on the order of 2.3%. We've seen unemployment nationally shoot up something close to 10%. Of course, why the stock market has collapsed to, now it's come back somewhat, but still down probably 30, 35% from the peak. Now, for those of you who may have seen me talk in the past, you'll know, of course, that I don't necessarily believe that. A couple years ago, I, of course, was talking about the fact that this economy was going to go through a very tough time. I was very worried by a number of substantial imbalances in the U.S. economy. And it's my feeling that it's these imbalances that created a situation in which Lehman was going to fail. In other words, Lehman is not the cause of the problems in the U.S. economy. It's the result of the many problems in the U.S. economy. Now, of course, today as I speak in front of you, we know that things have changed tremendously. A year ago, when these financial institutions were starting to wobble, you saw what seemed to be denial about the underlying problems in the U.S. economy turn into complete and utter hysteria. Last October, it was the end of the world. We were about to see a worldwide global financial meltdown. Your best investment? Golden AT-47s. Head for the hills. Find your favorite cave. Now, where are we today? You look at the numbers, and everything points to the fact that we've not only hit bottom, but things almost seem to be improving. Durable goods orders, exports, consumer spending, auto sales, and of course, in the real estate sector, prices, sales, even construction and permits of single-family homes have all started to increase. And the big question is, are we through it? Are we done? Are we simply done with this mess and now we get to move forward again? No. When you think about the problems we've been through and what the government has done, in many ways, they have, in fact, stabilized the economy. But you know what? They haven't actually solved the underlying problems that exist out there in the economy. Let's go through a couple of them very quickly. Let's talk about housing. Obviously, we're here talking mainly about housing. I know most of the conversation is going to be about that. Housing. You saw the Case-Shiller Index come out in June. And 17 of the 20 major cities that they cover saw increases in price. Some small, some relatively large. Sales have come up very strongly over the last couple of months. The National Association of Realtors reported something on the order of a 5.2 million pace of sales in July of this year. And very sharp increase over what we've seen in previous months. Everything says, hey, everything's fine, right? Well, not really. We have another set of numbers that come from the Mortgage Bankers Association. And they say that something on the order of 6 to 7% of mortgages in this nation are seriously delinquent, 60 to 90 days behind on payment. There's enormous inventory of foreclosed units that have yet to hit the market. This problem hasn't been solved. Is there a potential for a double dip in prices? Absolutely. You know, sure, there's 13 people bidding on one foreclosed home right now, and it gives this element of stability. But is there enough appetite out there to absorb another 2 million foreclosed units? Here in California, right now, there's 250,000 mortgages in California that are 60 to 90 days behind. And then, of course, doesn't even take into account the fact that we still have pick-a-pays out there, courtesy Golden West, that are going to be hitting their reset in 2010, 2011. So it doesn't seem to me that we're anywhere near the end of that particular problem. How about the financial markets? You've seen the stock market come up 30%. Risk spreads have dropped to levels below where they were in the fall of 2007 when we had the first shockwaves hit the financial community. It's almost as if risk has gone away again. There is no more risk. We worked it out of the system already. But have we? The banks seem okay, but they're not okay because they fixed their problems. They're okay because, A, we had a very large change in the accounting rules and how they deal with distressed loans. You know, in my part of the world, we say they went from mark-to-market to mark-to-model to mark-to-myth. They're not valuing these distressed assets at the levels they need to be valued at. They get to pretend that they're healthy, even though they can pretend they're healthy, even though the spreads on what they borrow versus what they lend are so enormous right now. Nonetheless, the FDIC still came out in the second quarter and said that there are 450 banks that are of serious concern to them right now. That's only a small portion of it. That doesn't include the ones that are going to go under at some point in time in the future. Similarly with commercial real estate. We keep hearing about how there's this wave of commercial problems coming down the pike at us. Where are they? We haven't really seen them. But again, go back to the banks. The banks have zero incentive to get aggressive with these resets that have to occur in the commercial marketplace right now. You know, there's an old expression. Someone told this to me yesterday. I wish I could take credit for this. But the expression goes this way. A rolling loan gathers no loss. That's a good one, I have to say. That's going in my presentations for sure. The problem's there. It hasn't been solved. It's simply been covered up and simply been pushed out to the future. But most of all, the thing that worries me the most is not real estate, not commercial, and not even the banks. The thing that worries me the most is the U.S. consumer. Because in so many ways, over the last 15 years, Americans had a sense that they no longer needed to save. And they didn't think that because of this national bubble where all asset prices were going up to levels that really didn't make any sense. And you saw savings rates go from 0%, from 7% down to 0%. That couldn't last. People have to save. People still have to think about the future. Now, what's happened there? In the last 6, 7, 8 months, you've seen those savings rates go up to 5.5%. That's good. Until you sit down and look at why savings has gone up to 5.5%. A small portion of it is a cutback in spending, a very small portion of it. Most of it is the cut in taxes that went into place at the beginning of this year as part of the stimulus package. What we've done in the United States is not addressed the problem with the lack of saving. The only thing we've done is we've substituted private savings for public borrowing. And you know, that's a game we can only play for so long. At some point in time, well, not at some point in time, over the course of the next 18 months, the stimulus tax cut and the Bush tax cuts come to an end. And you know, listen, I'm not a fan of paying taxes, but we got bills to pay, folks, and we can't run these multi-billion dollar deficits forever. Those tax cuts have to go away. We have to start rebalancing our federal accounts. But when that happens, the consumers are going to find themselves without enough savings yet again. And that means another round of consumer pullbacks. So what's going to happen? What does it all add up to? Well, you know what? This quarter is going to be good. I'm looking for a 2 to 3% growth, probably flat in the fourth quarter. First half of next year, it's going to be okay. But the problems haven't been solved, and they're slowly going to come out of their caves. They're slowly going to reemerge. And it's going to be another round of problems for the economy. Second half of 2010 is going to be weak. 2011 could be very grim. Now, these changes have to occur. Don't expect that Obama or anybody, even if McCain, whoever was elected last year, no one can fix these problems. These are problems that we, the American public, have created. And we're going to have to work our way out of it. We have to consume less. We have to expect a reasonable appreciation in the assets we buy. We have to do something called saving for the future again. But once these things happen, the economy is going to be a stronger place. I have a lot of faith in the ability for the U.S. economy to prosper in the future. I have a tremendous amount of faith in California to prosper in the future. You know, this economy, California, we're having a tough time right now, and I'm so tired of hearing about it's because this state is imploding and everything's horrible and everybody's going to move to Las Vegas and live in the desert, right? No, we're not. The state has problems and we're going to fix them. But you know what? Despite all these problems over the last 15 years, the state has grown faster in terms of income, employment, population, and economic output than the U.S. has overall. And we've done that despite the fact that our homes have been overpriced and the U.S. dollar has been so high it's put a big squeeze on our exports. When we come out of this mess in 2-3 years, we're going to have cheap housing, which I applaud, and we're going to have a U.S. dollar which is weak, which is going to cause our export sector to do very well. And that's all good news. So the long-run prognosis is still positive, but we're not there yet, folks. We got a tough year to go. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
That was pretty good for somebody that didn't know he was going to give a speech, right? Our next speaker is Rick Sharga. Rick joined Realty Track in 2004, where he is responsible for brand management, corporate positioning, public and investor relations, and marketing communications. As one of the country's most frequently quoted sources on foreclosures and mortgage and real estate trends, Rick has appeared on virtually every TV show in America many times. Every day. So he has really quite an influence on what people think about the market. And in his spare time, Rick is pursuing a black belt in Taekwondo, so when we get up into a panel here, don't mess with us. Okay.
My son talked me into the black belt. For a handful of you have actually seen my son. He's 13. He's taller than I am. So really, the black belt is all about self-defense for me as he gets into his teenage years. I wanted to thank Chris for talking about savings and the need for consumers to scale back because my wife joined me tonight, honey. And I also wanted to thank Chris for reminding us that, you know, I mean, and this goes back to something Aaron said, and I was so proud that Aaron actually asked us to stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance. My son came home from school today. First thing he said when he got home was, we got to sing God Bless America at school in front of a bunch of soldiers and policemen and firefighters, and it really made me feel good. And, you know, thank you. And as a country, we've come back from that kind of devastation. As a country, we will come back from this economic devastation as well. So that's my speech for the night. See if this actually works. I'm going to skip the commercial. I will tell anybody that's interested, if you'd like a copy of the slides afterwards, get me a business card or talk to Aaron. We'll make sure you get a copy of these things. Our data gets used by a lot of people. There's been a lot of press coverage because people are interested in foreclosures. So let's just kind of get into the meat of this. Foreclosure activity, you probably noticed, has increased. We've been doing our monthly U.S. foreclosure report since January of 2005. And since January of 2005, you go back year over year, we've had 43 consecutive months where this year's foreclosure numbers were higher than last year's foreclosure numbers. 43 months in a row. We don't see that ending until sometime in 2011. 2009, July, was the biggest single month we've ever recorded in terms of foreclosure activity. Over 361,000 U.S. households received a foreclosure notice just in the month of July. Let me put this in perspective for you, because Aaron told me that Chris and I were supposed to set the tone for all the solutions that are going to come up on stage after us. 2005 was the last year we saw anything resembling normal levels of foreclosure activity. And the good folks at the Mortgage Bankers Association will tell you that about 1% of all first and second loans will wind up in foreclosure in a normal marketplace. So in 2005, we had about 500,000 households receive a foreclosure notice. We had about 100,000 REOs, about 100,000 bank repossessions. We had 75,000 in July. So when you're wondering why it's taking so long to get things done, when you're wondering why you're not seeing these properties come to market as quickly as they are, keep this in mind. We're dealing with foreclosure activity levels that are 6 times what they would be in a normal market. We're dealing with REO levels that are 10 times what they would be in a normal market. The people responsible for managing these assets are simply overwhelmed. Ask yourself how many loan servicers, how many banks you know that have staffed up 10x over the last 4 years. And that's one of the real problems. And by the way, the rules keep changing. And it's really difficult for these folks to stay on top of all that. And then we have the courts and the legal system trying to help the situation by creating moratoria and other legislative delays that do a really good job of delaying the inevitable. And while the intention is honorable, trying to let people stay in their houses longer, what we're actually doing is seeing the unintended consequences of extending the housing downturn. Because properties that should have foreclosed on 2 years ago are now just hitting the process. So it's kind of a mess. And this is what it's looked like. This is like my son's growth chart. We notice that every time he puts on a pair of pants that used to fit. But if you look at 2005 at the left and 2008 at the right, you can see that we finished last year with 2.3 million households receiving a foreclosure notice in 1 year.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2009, 1M1 Properties, Appraisal Institute of Southern California, Awesome Limousines, Community Reinvest Group, Del May Properties, Elite Auctions, FarBelowMarket.com, The Inland Empire Investors Forum, Las Brisas Escrow, Los Angeles Meeting and Event Center, Mike Cantu, The Mortgage Equity Group, National Association of Real Estate Investors, North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Realty Track, Saddleback Valley Communities, San Jose Real Estate Investor Association, Stars Photography, Tony Alvarez, and the Women's Council of Realtors Inland Valley Chapter.